was looking at my Facebook line, I guess you might say, or whatever you call feed or whatever, Monday, and a preacher friend of mine had posted a link to this article that I want to show you that was written by Dave Adamson of Fox News on Monday. It presents some things that it's kind of interesting what he says. It's almost contradictory in some places, and so I'll be stopping in a few places and make some observations, but I don't want to just, you know, look at this article and just notice all the contradictions that are within it and assumptions, but I do want to notice a few of them. So this is kind of a lengthy reading, but I encourage you to read along with me. It says, "The church as we know it is over. Here's what's next," by Dave Adamson of Fox News, March 11th, 2019. A Fox News alert. If you watch Fox News, everything's an alert. Anyway, church, as we've known it for the past few generations, is over. Every church you've ever attended, or that you drive by on your way to a Sunday sporting event, was built on a physical attendance model that is location-centric. As a result, and pastors have spent time every week encouraging, inviting, and pleading with people to come to a specific place at a specific time on Sundays. This approach has created church staffing models, systems, and ministry strategies focused on improving attendance. It's also why there is an annual top 100 list of America's most attended churches. But that way of doing church is dead. And just like Joshua needed to hear God say, "Moses, my servant, is dead," Joshua 1 and verse 2, so he could move into the next level of leadership, I think the church needs to accept the fate of physical church as we know it, so we can move into the next phase of the digital church. Have you ever noticed how that false teachers will misuse the Word of God to try to authorize the point that they're trying to make? There's a difference between God telling Joshua, "Moses, my servant, is dead, and I'm moving you into the leadership to lead my children into the promised land," and Dave Adamson assuming that he somehow has insight to the will of God in knowing that the physical attendance of the church is dead and we're moving on into the 21st century, and this is the way the church will be run from now on. Now, as I say that, and as you read this, I mean, that's the impression that you get, isn't it? But as we continue to read, he's going to make some statements that you and I should not disagree with. But this one particular point, we will need to examine. So, he continues, "Now, about a decade ago, forward-thinking churches realized that people no longer engaged with organizations just physically. So they developed online platforms that streamed services parallel to the physical church. This caused plenty of controversy at the time because people suddenly had an option to attend church or stay home and watch online. Rocking the old location-centric model, so church leaders opted to keep the physical and digital services separate. Then, when social media and YouTube entered the scene, those forward-thinking churches adjusted again, creating multi-channel strategies that allowed people to access some content physically, some online, and some on the church's social media platforms. But the times have changed yet again. The secular marketplace has known for years that customers connect with brands online and offline seamlessly. Companies like Home Depot, Starbucks, Walmart, Crate and Barrel have adopted omni-channel strategies that allow people to shop either online, through an app, or in store. The result has been increased sales, both online and at brick-and-mortar stores. After studying 46,000 shoppers, Harvard Business Review discovered in January of 2017 that people who use several different channels to seamlessly connect with a store were more loyal to the brand, 23% more likely to repeat trips to the retailer's physical store, and more likely to recommend the brand to family and friends than those who had used the single channel, such as physical attendance only. Did you catch that? How that the physical store structure is now physical attendance. If you go to Walmart today, you are attending Walmart. I think that's a slip of the pen right there. But nevertheless, that's what he wrote. While omni-channel and multi-channel may seem similar, there's a difference. Multi-channel is like the swim lanes in a swimming pool. Each lane has its own boundaries and direction. In the same way, physical church has its strategies and measurements of success, while church online has its own separate but similar systems and measurements of success. Omnichannel, however, is like a pool with no lane buoys. Everyone is able to explore any part of the pool in their own time. The omnichannel approach to church would allow people to fully connect and engage with a church without the need to step inside a physical environment every week. They could attend one Sunday, listen to a message on podcast the following week, watch a live online stream the Sunday after, and catch the message on demand in a church app the week after that. Or I guess they could pick any one of these and do whatever they want to do, but certainly not enter into the physical structure every week. He continues, this shifts the church from location-centric approach to an audience-centric approach that allows people to connect and engage with churches both digitally and physically. That one sentence there gives you a good summation, I think, of the motive for this way of thinking and also insight to the way a lot of people think about church. They think that church is for them rather than them being part of the church and contributing to the success of the church, even in worship service. We'll talk about that in a little bit. This approach allows the church to connect with people physically for an hour on Sunday and stay connected for the other 167 hours of the week digitally. Now, this is where you and I would agree in regards to using technology and online services and so forth, in that there's nothing wrong with a congregation as we do, recording our sermons and putting them on our website so that people listen to them whenever they want to, or posting articles and so forth. We have a Facebook page that we post a little article on. I think Larry and Jonathan, Larry primarily is handling that and choosing the articles to put on that. Nothing wrong with that, but all of those things, our website and a Facebook page and our newspaper article and all of those things, doesn't take away from attending the physical structure. So there's nothing wrong with using technology in the way he just said there. But the things that he said before were, well, you can choose to attend the services at the physical structure, or you can watch it online, or you can listen to it on a podcast. Or, see, it's the or. That's the problem. In a world where people have an increasing number of online channels and apps to watch or listen to content and build community around that content, the church needs to realize that this is the current reality. Well, we do realize that. Whether pastors planned it or not, more people than ever are accessing their content digitally via live web streaming, video on demand, podcast, apps, and YouTube. In this way, church attendance is not decreasing, it is decentralizing. And so what he's saying there is that if we were live streaming our worship services, someone could be watching that live stream. We wouldn't know they were or not. We wouldn't even know if they identified as a member of the Southside Church of Christ or not. It'd be just whatever they wanted to identify, I guess. Is that consistent with what the scriptures teach in regards to being a member of the Lord's church? When he talks about decentralizing, he's talking about decentralizing the local congregation. You could have a member on the other side of the world just watching a live stream. And there's nothing wrong with watching that live stream, but substituting the live stream for actually attending and participating in worship. See, just watching a worship service isn't participating in the worship service. If the church is going to make an impact in the modern world, we need to take the swim lanes out and let people explore our church and our content in their own time, in their own way. We need to understand that digital channels do not compete with physical attendance. They partner with it. I would agree with that. You know, to the extent that it can enhance getting the gospel message out, but it is not going to substitute for attending the local worship service. And we're going to talk about that in just a minute. And if the marketplace is an indicator, which I want you to notice here, that the pattern is not the New Testament church, the pattern is the marketplace. We're going to market the church the way the marketplace markets their product and their store, you see. Will lead to increased physical attendance. Well, maybe it will, maybe it won't. You just said a little bit ago that you didn't even have to attend physically. Leadership requires focus on where you want to be, not where you were or where you are. As Pastor Craig Groeschel, I don't know, of Life Church says, if we want to reach people that no one else is reaching, we've got to do things that no one else is doing. I can even agree with that statement. Because no one else is teaching the truth like we are. If we want to reach people who are hungry and thirsting for righteousness, we have to teach the truth. But we don't have to let people substitute a streaming service as a substitute for actually attending and participating in a physical service. So, I want us to consider the virtual church, or maybe I should have used his terminology, the quote-unquote physical church versus the doctrine of Christ. Or even he said the digital church. Maybe that would be the way to say it. The digital church versus the doctrine of Christ. And we looked at these verses this morning, and I intentionally did that lesson this morning to kind of dovetail into tonight's lesson. Jesus said about his church, he said, I will build my church. How do we identify his church? We identify it by teaching the doctrine of Christ and practicing what the Lord tells us to do, not by teaching for doctrines the commandments of men, Matthew 15, verses 8 and 9, making our worship vain or empty. We notice John 4 in verses 23 through 24, where we read, the hour is coming and now is when true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For the Father is seeking such to worship Him. God is a spirit, and those who worship Him must worship Him in spirit and in truth. Well, what is truth? Where do you find truth? What is the definition of truth? Well, Jesus gave us that in John 8, 31 and 32, when He said to those Jews who believed on Him, if you abide in My word, you are My disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. If you abide in My word, you will know the truth. Well, what if I don't abide in His word? Can I know the truth if I don't abide in His word? No. So if I'm going to worship God in truth, I need to worship God as His word teaches me to worship Him. Right? That's a necessary conclusion that you have to draw. So Christ said, I will build My church, and His word teaches His church, the body of the saved, to assemble. Notice Hebrews 10 and verse 25, that we are not to be forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. You know, people say, well, you know, the Bible was written a long time ago, and the New Testament was finished in 2,000 years ago, and that's an old document, and times have changed, and it doesn't apply anymore. Man, it's almost to me like Hebrews 10:25 applies as much right now as it did, or more, as it did when it was written. People talking about forsaking the assembling of themselves together in favor of sitting at home and watching a live stream. Right? It says don't do that. Don't sit at home and watch a live stream. Assemble. Well, why do I have to assemble? I can see everything and hear everything, and I'm as encouraged here as I would be if I was there. It's not about you. It's not about you. Being a Christian, a follower of Christ, is not about you. It's about you glorifying God. It's about you following Christ. It's about you revering God and keeping His commandments. It's about, if you love Me, you will keep My commandments. It's about not you being edified, but you participating in edifying others. Not only you being exhorted, but you exhorting those that you are assembled with. And you are not exhorting anyone if you're sitting in front of a computer at home. You might be edified, and you might be exhorted, but you're not edifying and you're not exhorting. You're not worshiping in truth, in accordance to the Word of God. James 2 and verse 2 says, if there should come into your assembly a man with gold rings and fine apparel, and should come a poor man in filthy clothes and so on and so forth. He's talking about, you know, people thinking they're better than others, and he's just saying that's not true. But we need to notice here that he says, people come into your assembly. It seems that our article was indicating that, you know, really you don't have to have an assembly. You could, I kind of joked with a friend of mine, oh man, it's been 40 years ago, you know, when holograms, you're talking about holograms and stuff, and I said, you know, with these holograms that they got now, we could preach in a dozen congregations the same Sunday at the same time. They just live feed our hologram into their pulpit, and we just preach the lesson to them. He says, yeah. And the members could send their hologram into the pews. And it's almost like, wow, that's what this article is all about. We are to assemble. In 1 Corinthians 14 and verse 23, it says, therefore, if the whole church comes together in, whoa, here we go, one place. Dave, you got a problem here. The whole church is to come together in one place. And when he's talking about church here, he's not talking about the universal church. He's talking about the local congregation there at Corinth. The whole church comes together in one place. They're not scattered all over the pool looking for the message wherever they want to find the message. The church is to come together in one place. And there come in someone who's not a member of the church. Comes into your assembly. There's to be an assembly. 1 Corinthians 14 and verse 26, it says, how is it then, brother, whenever you come together, each one of you has a psalm, has a teaching, has a tongue, has a revelation, has an interpretation. Let all things be done for edification. And there in particular, he's talking about, in that context, he was talking about people who were misusing spiritual gifts primarily, and particularly tongues and prophecy. That they were doing it to call attention to themselves. And the point that he's making in context is, you're not there to call attention to yourself. You're there to edify those you are speaking to. A lot of preachers need to learn that. You're not there to call attention to yourself and to be in the limelight. You are there to teach, instruct, and edify those that you are in front of. It's not about you. It's about them. When you come together, whether you're in the pulpit or in the pew, it is to edify those you are assembled with. You can't do that if you're watching online. Christ teaches his church to assemble to sing. If you were watching this worship service online, live streaming, could you be singing along as we were singing? Yeah, you could do that. Would you be fulfilling the purpose of which we are to sing? That why Christ taught his church to sing when they assembled together? Nope. Look, Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 19 says, speaking to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord. How can you, sitting at home and or in a car or wherever it might be, singing along, live stream, are you speaking to the others who are singing? No. Just edifying yourself. That's not what it's about. Colossians 3 and verse 16, let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another. Can't do that if you're watching a live stream. Now, you might be taught and you might be admonished, but you're not teaching and admonishing the others. Teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace or favor in your hearts to the Lord. Christ teaches His church to assemble for the observance of the Lord's Supper. In Acts chapter 20 and verse 7, it says, on the first day of the week, when the disciples came together to break bread, they weren't scattered all over the pool, partaking of the Lord's Supper wherever they chose to use Dave's parallel example. They all came together to break bread. In 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 20, it says, therefore, when you come together in one place, this is not to eat the Lord's. And the Corinthians had perverted the Lord's Supper. They were no longer partaking of the Lord's Supper in remembrance of Christ. They were partaking of the Lord's Supper as if it was a common meal. They were keying in on the word supper, and they thought, well, this is about us just having fellowship with each other in the eating of a meal. They were wrong, and that's what he's correcting here in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. Nevertheless, it is true that if you were to partake of the Lord's Supper, you do that by coming together in one place. They were not partaking of the Lord's Supper because they weren't doing it for the right reason. They had perverted the Lord's Supper. Notice also in 1 Corinthians 11, verses 33 and 34, it says, therefore, my brethren, when you come together to eat, wait for one another. But if anyone is hungry, let him eat at home. There are things that you do when you come together, and there are things that you don't do when you come together in worship to God. If you're hungry, you don't do it in the assembly of the church. You do it at home, lest you come together for judgment. And he's been talking about judgment here, and this is what they were doing. They were judged. They were corrected. They were called out for what they were doing so that they could be corrected. So he says, if anyone's hungry, let him eat at home, lest you come together for judgment. He said, I'll judge you again in this if I have to. And the rest I will set in order when I come. So it's an important area of study, just noticing the correct reason to partake of the Lord's Supper, the incorrect motive to partake of the Lord's Supper, calling something the Lord's Supper when it's not the Lord's Supper. They had perverted it so much. But for our purposes, we need to notice that you cannot watch a live stream or even a recorded worship service and have your own fruit of the vine and your own unleavened bread and partake of that at home and be partaking of it in spirit and in truth, because to partake of the Lord's Supper in truth, you do that when the church comes together to eat the Lord's Supper. Christ teaches His church to assemble for the contribution. In 1 Corinthians 16, in verses 1 and 2, it says, now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given order to the churches of Galatia, so you must do also. On the first day of the week, let each one of you lay something aside, storing up as he may prosper, that there be no collections when I come. You know, we've got brethren who are saying, well, that's not even about taking up a collection on for the purpose of supporting the financial responsibilities of the church, to pay of the preacher or to pay the rent or the mortgage on the building or pay the light bill and utility bills and all. That's not what, this is a collection for the saints, the needy saints in Jerusalem. Well, and in context, they're exactly right. He was referring to a collection for the needy saints at Jerusalem. But we have a pattern here. A pattern established. That here's a financial need, and the church is instructed as to how to meet that financial need. They were to lay aside every first day of the week so that there'd be no collection when Paul did come through there to take up their funds, that this was something they would be preparing for and ready for. But the church has other financial needs other than benevolent, meeting the benevolent needs of brethren in other places. How do we meet those financial needs? We use the same pattern. On the first day of the week. Why the first day of the week? Because it's on the first day of the week the disciples came together to break bread. They're assembled anyway. They're assembled for the purpose of observing the Lord's Supper specifically. Now, there's other things that they do as well. Everyone has a psalm, has a prophecy, has a teaching. But the primary reason we come together on the first day of the week is to observe the Lord's Supper. He says, another act of worship that you participate on the first day of the week is to lay by in store. So this is a necessary inference thing. You know, well, when do we lay by in store? Can't we do that any day of the week? Denominations seem to think so. They can take up a contribution any day of the week. Or they can mail it in or what. No, this says you do this when you come together, when the church is together on the first day of the week. So, what we have seen here tonight, regardless of what Dave has to say or anyone else has to say, regardless of what the marketplace is doing and how successful they might be in doing that, we're not to pattern ourselves after the marketplace. We're to pattern ourselves after the doctrine of Christ as we've received it in the first century. Christ teaches his church to assemble. That's what we've noticed. Hebrews 10:25, James 2:2, 1 Corinthians 14, verses 23 and 26. He teaches the church to assemble to sing, that we might edify one another, teach one another. He teaches us to assemble to observe the Lord's Supper. He teaches us to assemble to give of our means in financial support of the work of the church. In closing, I'd just like to remind you that Jesus said, I will build my church. It's not your church to do whatever you want to do with it. It's his church. He has all authority in all things. He tells us, unless we worship him in spirit and in truth, we are worshiping in vain. True worshipers worship the Father in truth. We've noticed that the source of that truth is his word. We noticed this morning, 2 John verses 9 through 11. Whoever transgresses and does not abide in the doctrine of Christ does not have God. Well, why can't we watch a live streaming worship service and that be the same as us actually being there? Because that's not what the doctrine of Christ teaches us. The doctrine of Christ teaches us to assemble to worship. It's not about us being edified, it's about us participating in the edifying process. He who abides in the doctrine of Christ has both the Father and the Son. That's where I want to be. I want to be in fellowship with the Father and the Son. If anyone comes to you and does not bring this doctrine, do not receive him into your house or greet him. For he who greets him, he who agrees with him, goes along with him, shares in his evil deeds. Sorry, Dave. Not going to do it. Not going to do it. It's not just another way. It's not a modern way. It's not a forward-thinking way. It's not merely those things. It's evil. It's an evil way. You cannot substitute assembling with the saints as the Lord teaches us. Nadab and Abihu learned that lesson the hard way, didn't they? Cain learned that lesson the hard way. We could cite so many Old Testament examples of people who learned this lesson the hard way. When God specifies, we're not at liberty to generalize. If you love me, keep my commandments. So, this is a subject you'll be hearing more about. You know, it's kind of interesting when I was growing up and I was a young man, that the things that we talked about and the things that we got in discussions with other people about was a lot of times our doctrinal differences, their denominational practices versus the doctrine of Christ. But now things have shifted gears. This is going to be the conversation. You know, you're going to meet somebody down the road someplace, maybe you already have, and you're going to say, well, you know, I get my church by watching it at home on my computer or on TV. You know, televangelists and so forth. That's where I get my church. Of course, you've always got those people who say, well, my church is on a lake or in the woods or in the mountains. It's not about you being edified. It's about you edifying others. It's about you glorifying God by keeping His commandments. You're here tonight and you've made a decision to keep God's commandments always in your life, turn away from your sins and always trust in Him and lean upon Him. You haven't been baptized for the remission of your sins, but you know you need to be and you want to be, and everything's ready. We're ready for you. Certainly God is ready too. If you're here tonight and you're a child of God and you're out of favor with God, you need to make correction with Him. You need your brothers and sisters to pray with you and for you. We encourage you to let that be known. We'd encourage you to come as we stand and sing this song.